Welcome to episode 13 of the Agriculture Podcast. I'm Jessica Benson here for the American Ag Network. And today I'm talking to Dan Byers. And as you can see down there on the bottom, he's a bodybuilder. So we'll have lots of things to talk about from there. Not only agriculture, because obviously that's the focus, but he's also the owner of Six Pack Meats. And we will get to that as well eventually. But Dan, let's start out here. First of all, before I even thought about getting into this line of work or contemplating having a job like this, I heard you speaking on Ag Uncensored podcast, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And so, you know, I don't always listen to that podcast, but then when you were just talking and then you talked about being a bodybuilder as well as a rancher, and I was like, wow, I don't know many people like that, so I gotta go find this guy on social media. And I did right away, and then I followed you, and then now we're here. Now I'm working in this industry, and now, I want to talk to people like you. I want people like you to have the platform to speak because, you deserve it. So let's start with where you grew up, kind of your background in agriculture, and where you came from.
Okay. I grew up in West Central Illinois. Good or bad, we're only about 35 minutes away from Burlington, Iowa, and the way Illinois runs its state nowadays, I almost wish we were on the other side of the border, but that's a different topic. But grew up on a family farm, right where we live, throughout school. My dad started in 1983, so I guess I've been 5 years old, started bought some forage harvesting equipment to kind of chop his own silage and start doing it for a few neighbors to kind of help pay for the equipment, the chopper and the bagger and wagons and that kind of thing. That kind of steadily, as I was a kid growing up, continued to grow. I went through high school, was very active in FFA, spent a year traveling the state as a state officer, went on to the University of Illinois, and then came home to the operation.
What did you go to school for?
Ag economics.
Okay.
So, came home. We've got a functioning farm, corn, beans, beef cattle. By then, our silage business had grown to, I think, when I came home from school, we had three crews, three choppers, three baggers. And then kind of things really started to grow from there to where we've had as many as six crews covering. This last year I took on another territory and we covered probably close to 40 counties in Illinois, and then had a big job down in southern Missouri and a big job in southern Indiana as well. So kind of traveling three states doing that and
are you the main secretary, or how do you keep track of all
this? we do have a secretary, but it's definitely not to keep track of. I mean, between a full scale, custom forage business, along with, our farm, and, with the farm, try to diversify from there. You mentioned, our Six Pack Meats venture. For the last time gets away, I don't want to put a figure on it, but I'm going to say 6 or 7 years, I've just been doing, butcher beef for local people, like my in-laws, my family. And then through some social media posts, kind of developed a little bit of a following there.
Sure. So my family, we have a cow-calf operation too. And mm-hmm. People will come to me and be like, can I get beef from you? And it's like, right. Well, it's not that simple. Like, right. we don't finish any cattle very often, yep. And if we have beef ourselves from our own cattle, it's because we had an open heifer and, mm-hmm. just kind of goes from there. But so how did you guys make the shift from maybe just making beef for yourselves? Were people seeking it out from you, or?
A little bit. And we were the same way. I mean, we were cow calf for years, and we weren't finishing cattle. And honestly, it kind of spurned from my mother and father-in-law, you know, weren't, you know, maybe completely satisfied with what they were getting. And it's like, well, I've got the calves. I'll just put some on feed. And, you know, that's kind of where it started. And then, you know, I put it just a handful more on, you know, kind of as just in case, kind of promoted on Facebook. And I mean, there's steadily, we were maybe doing 5 or 6 head for multiple years. And then last year with COVID and everything, it really took off to where I had a waiting list for it. And at that point, you know, between some other people doing something very similar, along with some of my silage customers doing something similar in the, you know, to the direct consumer sales, I kind of sought out, you know, some advice on it. And, you know, really about April of last year is when I set down this road to, you know, take this on or get my meat broker's license, and work towards getting set up to where not only can we offer quarters and halves on a local basis, but have a website set up where people simply can go click on it, find what box that they would like to get an order, and, you know, be set up to ship it frozen meat to the 48 continental United States. And so far we started our first shipments in February, and to this date we've put meat in 15 different states so far. So
Wow. It's
gone, you know, for kind of a startup, it's kind of gone as well, you know, as could have expected and hoped for, and definitely.
Yeah. And the pandemic kind of pushed everyone in the right direction too.
Well, that's just it. I mean, you know, when I've talked to people about it, I mean, you know, I kind of jokingly say that the time to do it was yesterday. You know, I mean, it's to say I'm going to, you know, all maybe a year from now, I'm going to think about it or this or that. I mean, I'm glad I jumped on it when I did. And honestly, we could have been up and running sooner than what we were, but it's what everybody faces, the logistics of getting locker appointments and that kind of thing. And, you know, kind of was really couldn't get my first set of locker appointments till January. But we're kind of set up there now to kind of, you know, be consistent with that and got some good options there, and hopefully things kind of keep, you know, growing as we move forward.
Yeah. So do you do it where the consumer purchases a live animal, and so they're the owner, but you technically take care of it until slaughter? Is that how you do it, or how do you guys do it there?
Basically, we in terms of the quarters and halves, I've kind of moved towards where I charge by the hanging weight. And so, you know, I pay for everything, and then they pay me X amount of pound, you know, on the hanging weight. You know, I designate, you know, because usually when I'm taking calves in, you know, the lockers I'm using are a couple hours away. And so I'm trying to book appointments for 8 to 10 head at a time if I can, just to make the trip worthwhile.
Yeah.
So I'll kind of designate that, but, you know, we're doing some of that, but honestly, really heavily this spring, it's the individual cuts in the smaller boxes, the 8 to 10 pound boxes that we ship. That's what we've done the bulk of so far.
You know. Right. Well, and you've had to work your way up to something like that. So what kind of process do you have to get certified, or any special certifications to be able to do that? Or how does that work?
I would tell anybody, the first thing I would do is check within your state, you know, what it varies from state to state. But here in Illinois, you've got to have a meat broker's license in order to, you know, sell retail beef like that. I mean, legally, I can sell it anywhere to anybody. And getting that license, ironically, for as horrible as Illinois is to do business in, was actually very easy. It was a $50 license, a very simple application. The inspector came out, looked at an empty freezer that was functioning, and says, you know, everything looks good, and signed off on it. And I'm good until June 30th when, you know, we'll renew the license. He basically said with COVID and how busy he is, he may or may not be back out to inspect.
Sure. Just bombard them so they don't have enough people, and then it doesn't
right. But it, you know, so there's that, and then the other thing that I'm I'm doing is I will not use a locker unless they can put the USDA inspection stamp on it. You know, because we're crossing state lines, and I want to be. I'm trying to be first class in the way we're doing it. Do it the right way. Not open ourselves up to any kind of problems or issues, yeah. And you know, just run it like a professional type deal.
Yeah, food safety is probably your priority, I would say.
Right.
Yeah. But before we get too deep into this stuff, I was really thinking about this, and just because you're very similar to me with you, considering our interests and everything, I want to establish more of like your background, and maybe mine as well, because I think ultimately what this podcast is for is reaching out to consumers as well as producers. But producers, we all kind of know what we're about already. So it's about relating to consumers more on a personal level. And so that's why I liked, you know, when we discussed what we were going to talk about on this podcast beforehand, that you brought up, you know, some personal issues, maybe, or personal experiences. And Lord knows I have my fair share of personal experiences. And so let's just talk a little bit about those. You know, you said you lost 80 pounds twice in your life. I think I've lost 20 twice in my life, but I wouldn't compare that at all to this. So let's talk about that. You want to talk about the specific two times and, you know, how you found the motivation and the discipline to do that. And I don't even like the word motivation. It's a concept that is, it's fleeting and it's not sustainable, but let's talk about that a little bit, you know?
Yeah. The first time was going into my junior year of college.
So you had the freshman 50 dealing, you know?
Yeah, the freshman something. Yeah.
We're all over there.
50 might be on the light side, but I chip back. I mean, I've always, most of my life was always kind of somewhat of a heavier set type person. I wasn't, you know, in high school, I wasn't the skinny guy by any stretch. I mean, I was a functioning athlete. I played basketball, football, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I figured you were an athlete of some sort.
Yeah. So, but I was never like the smaller guy. And then obviously, you know, college accentuated that. And
was it all the snacks? It wasn't beer, was it?
Yeah, no Budweiser or Papa John's. You know, they didn't have me on speed dial or nothing. You know, so anyway, I made that change in college, and I mean, when I graduated college, I was still thin and had lost weight, and I kind of came back home. You get in your routine, and you know, the workouts went from, it kind of snowballed to where it didn't happen, and then kind of, you know, put it back on. And then in 2009, I'm guessing it's one of those things when you start out to do, I'm saying 80 pounds, and I think that's close.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, neither time was it an issue where I think I'm going to start losing weight, so I better weigh myself so I know exactly what that figure is when I'm done. But I started in, it just happened. But yeah. In 2009, I went through a divorce, and I knew I'd lost some weight, and kind of started, you know, whatever, working out. And then it took on a life of its own. I've never quit since. And then,
yeah.
You know, evolved from there.
I can relate to the divorce thing. Mine is a little more recent. But that divorce is tough, and it's not a fun experience. But I think those experiences really, they make or break you, and you can either let it eat you up, or you can do something about it, like what you did. And you know, I too made some changes in my life, and you know, it's kind of like a jolt to the system. So.
Yeah,
Whether it's divorce or, you know, whatever that challenge is, I think I've learned that we need to embrace those things. Like, you got to just bear hug the crap out of it. You know, don't shy away from it, because at the end of the day, it makes you better.
Yeah. No, it transformed me. I mean, there's no going back now. I mean, this is my lifestyle. We've you know, over time I've developed, you know, we've got a gym in our home basement that is probably better equipped than some YMCAs, you know.
Yeah. It's just, so you were just fine over quarantine. You were just fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and actually I had COVID, there at the end of October, and I didn't, of course being quarantined, but I never missed a workout because I was self-contained in here at home. I still got up at my 3:05 a.m. like I do. And I trained. They weren't my best workouts by any stretch of imagination. And for about 4 or 5 days, I probably noon, 1 o'clock, I was wiped out and I had to lay down for a while, but it didn't stop me from working out when I had it. So.
Yeah. So you get up at 3:05 every morning,
6 days a week. Yep.
Why 3:05 specifically? And just why at that time of day in general?
I've always wanted to be where my training and stuff was done before I left the house in the morning. Otherwise I have a nervous itch about getting it done or not knowing what the day brings. And I'd rather condition myself to get up early and work out than come home after a long day and think you're going to do it. And the 3:05 thing, part of that comes from, cause I don't want to see a 2 in front of the alarm clock when I, you know, get up, I guess, but
that's when the bar closes.
Well, yeah, well, trust me. There's been some New Year's days where I'm sure some friends of mine were probably getting home as I was getting up, but
I'm 30 and I'm over that. I can't do it.
Yeah, but
I need an IV to recover and
Yeah, no, and that being said, there was a couple of days last week where I woke up and I, you know, use a bathroom in the night. It was 2:50 and I'm like, okay, that's the worst. Like 15 minutes before I'm supposed to get up. So I just got up and got the day started. But it just came down to, you know, when I started, you know, I kind of kept ramping up my wake up time. And when I started competing, I had to allow enough time to get in, you know, my 60 minutes of fasted cardio, come back upstairs, eat, go back downstairs and train. And that's just kind of where it settled in to where now even if, let's say it's a day where I don't have to do both cardio and train, I it's 3:05, 6 days a week, you know.
Yeah.
So begin with who I am.
Yeah. Did you hire a trainer then when you decided to do competitions? You said in 2019, that's when you finally decided to.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually I was working with someone, before that. I mean, it's the same guy that I'm working with now, but, Dave Paulsonella is my coach. He actually lives in Delaware. And, you know, I'm listening to him on some podcasts and stuff. I, you know, this is clear back. And I think I started with him with December of 2015. And so, you know, he writes my diet, you know, my training, you know, depending on what we're wanting to do at the time and yeah, kind of takes it from there.
Yeah. I've never competed. I've maybe thought about it but I don't think I would ever want to do it. However, I will say, I think to anyone that might ever consider it, definitely prioritize in finding a trainer that knows what they're doing and knows what they're talking about. Like, shop around, because you can really screw yourself up physically as well as mentally, hormonally, if you don't have a professional helping you out with that kind of stuff. That's when you're dealing with just your diet and losing weight like that and being that lean, there's a lot of things that go into it besides just being skinny and looking muscular. It's a science.
No, and that's what I like about him. He's very old school and it's very straightforward, and we're not doing gimmicks. We're eating, you know, good clean whole food. And I mean, and trust me, you see everything backstage, you know, when you compete, as far as, you know, what people eat before the show or this or that. And it's not that way with him, and him and I just mesh well. And I mean, he gives me the brutal honesty, which is what I want. And it kind of works out well.
Yeah. I've learned if people tell you what you don't want to hear, then you should probably listen to them.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I'm just curious though, before a guy or a gal goes on stage, what are people eating back there? I've seen, you know, them just stuff Snickers down their throat and anything with sugar. And what is the truth? I mean, do they really do that?
Yeah, there is. the way we do it is we stick with the plan. You know, we ate clean to get there, and that's the way we do it through the end. I mean, you know, my water gets shut off the Friday night before at like 4 o'clock, you know, trying to be as dry as we can. But yeah, as far as carbon up, I mean, you'll see people at, you know, rice cakes with honey or candy. And trust me, once the night shows, the finals is over at night, and if I'm not competing the next weekend, if you watch me eat, it would make your gut ache. I mean, I treat myself, and that's probably being a mild understatement, but, but there is some advantage to that. You're so depleted that it kind of helps, you know, replenish you. But yeah, he warned me before my very first show I ever competed. He's like, you're going to see everything under the sun backstage, but we're going to stick with the plan. We're going to do it the old school way. And that's the way we've always done it.
Nice. I like that. So you say your favorite quote is, how you do anything is how you do everything. So where'd you pick up on that, and why is that your shtick?
I to the point, I think people around me get tired of hearing me say it, but I think I heard it somewhere in a podcast or multiple ones, you know, and it's just, to me, it just rings true with everything in life. You know, to take for, not to pass judgment on anybody, but if you're the person that gets the shopping cart at the grocery store and then leaves it in the middle of the lot instead of walking it over to whatever, I mean, where else are you cutting corners, you know, yeah. The rest of your life? And it just, to me, it's more about, you know, doing it the right way and not, you know, trying to do something, you know, halfway and as a result, not as well. So,
yeah. Cutting corners is, I mean, it might get you somewhere quicker, but yeah, like you said, at the end of the day, it's not going to. Well,
yeah. I mean, and that's how, you know, like we tried to, you know, start the with our meat business is, if there's an issue or there's a problem, you know, we're going to stand behind it and we're going to, you know, take care of it. Cause that's the way we build our silage business, you know, over the years is doing the best we can to do it the right way. And if there was an issue or a problem, then we take care of it and, you know, kind of go from there.
Yeah. It's to me, it all comes down to discipline, and whether it's bodybuilding or, you know, cutting silage or selling meat, it doesn't matter. I mean, right. Yeah, like you said, how you do anything is how you do everything. Makes right. Sense. Yeah. So let's shift over to I see you guys hire South Africans, so you must be a big operation.
Yeah, we use a lot of H2A labor for our silage business. We've got
it doesn't necessarily, I'm up here in North Dakota, it seems like all the H2A workers are South African, but it doesn't necessarily mean,
because they come we've got a group of South Africans that there's a group of them that come back every year. But we've also got a very good group of Mexicans and actually my personal crew that when I'm chopping is mostly Mexican. And great group of guys. I'd run through a wall for them. I mean, you know, they've been very good to me. And you know, without the H2A program, we'd have to line up a whole bunch of equipment and just sell, because we can't get the help otherwise. And we've tried. And I think a misconception out there about H2A labor is like it's some sort of cheap labor route for us, and that couldn't be further from the truth. It's probably the most expensive way you can do it.
Yeah. You know, I have some, we can talk about this post podcast, but I have some experience with the South African community, but this wasn't even a topic we were supposed to talk about, but the H2A program is essential for American agriculture.
Well, and when they had that travel ban come across there, January, you know, I gained a whole lot of new Facebook friends in South Africa because it circulated around the world when I posted it. But you know, I sent a letter to our representative and of course I posted it on social media and it gained a lot of traction, but to deprive that pool of workers would have been nothing short of devastation, not only for us, but I mean, other custom cutters or, you know, vineyards or, you know, just all kinds of, you know, part segments of the industry that use it.
Yeah, it would be crippling. And I think recently, around my hometown, there was a co-op that they had South Africans working at the co-op because they couldn't find help. Because, I mean, quite frankly, Americans, they don't want to work for that wage, or and it's difficult work, obviously. Agriculture is tough work. And yeah, they had a hard time. So these South Africans, they had them working there. And people, Americans, obviously, were very upset about it, saying they took jobs from the Americans. And it's like, well, no, they didn't. That's the simple answer. But yeah, it is, the H-2A program is essential for American agriculture. And that is, it is what it is.
Right.
Yeah. So your dad said, or you, your dad said, I am friends with your dad, I guess. No, you said that your dad started your main business in 1983. So you were just a little kid then. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you have 5 forage harvesters and crews with the H-2A program. Mm-hmm. And you said approximately 40 Illinois counties you're working in. And yeah, so you've been doing that and the farming and the ranching. And how do you do, like you said, you get up at 3 a.m. to work out. Yes. Mm-hmm. But I know, as well as anybody in the fitness world, that if you want to eat right, you gotta plan that out. Like, you can't just say, I'm going to eat well. Cause if you don't prep, it's not going to happen. Like, right. I'm going to eat something terrible for every meal, because that's just how it goes. So where do you find time? Do you do it like one day a week where you have everything lined up for the rest of the week?
Yeah. No, I, what I'll do is, I mean, and it's kind of understood in the house that when I meal prep, just everyone just will get out of the kitchen, because, you know, I take it over. But
there's so many dishes when you're done.
Yeah. I mean, what I do is at minimum, I used to do a week at a time. Anymore, I'll do, 2 weeks at a time. And I, you know, cook everything. I measure everything out. Put it, the meals in their individual containers with what they're supposed to be in. And then I freeze everything. And then simply the night before, I just set whatever the next day's containers, I set them out to thaw, and we're good to go. I mean, during silage, we're probably working 90 plus hours a week, you know, traveling and this and that. And when I say I don't waver, I don't miss a meal, I mean, that's the truth. People ask, well, what do you eat when you're gone? I eat the same thing that I eat when I'm at home. I do it that way. I've got a portable freezer I take with me. And, you know, I always jokingly say, and I'm really not joking, I'm probably the highest maintenance traveler you could, you know, go anywhere with because I set the systems up to make it work, you know, for me to have a foot in both worlds. And I actually have an idea, before I start silage in August, I'm if I can pull it off, I'm going to try and do a monster session and prep eight weeks worth of meals for a good share of the season, just, you know, to do it. So I don't know. We'll see. I want to do it. We'll see if I can pull it off. But
yeah, so this just popped into my head, considering that you have your own meat business. Have you thought about maybe starting your own meal prep business? So people like me can order it, and you do all.
Right. Yeah, I suppose that would be the next logical step, you know.
I mean, yeah, you got the platform to do it, so why not? I mean, right. Obviously, be a lot of work, but something to consider.
Right.
Yeah. So let's dive into Six Pack Meats now. I love the name. I love the theme. First, tell me about the themes that you have. What is You have like Mr. Olympia and just names like that. I love that. So yeah, my bodybuilder fans or my workout buddies might want to consider hitting you up. But talk about that.
Well, you know, and it kind of set out, you know, we want to do the meat thing, and obviously the bodybuilding world is you know, obviously a very protein rich, you know, segment of society. Kind of had that idea in, you know, people ask, well, are we trying to cater to that crowd? Well, yes and no. I mean, we're actually going to be, for a couple shows coming up, and maybe a third one, we're actually going to be a sponsor to kind of get our name out there. But a little bit cater to that crowd, but not really. I mean, we sold more to, you know, just the average consumer. But I did it for that reason. And like we were talking about earlier, I'm kind of an anomaly when it comes to, how many farmers step on stage and compete in bodybuilding. I mean, it's just,
The only one I know.
Yeah, exactly. So, as much as something to set us apart, you know, something unique rather than, buyer's premium cattle or whatever. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but rather than potentially get lost in the shuffle, it's a very unique spin on it. And so then I guess I get creative in what I do, and, you know, wanted to have name the different boxes that we've, you know, offer on the website. And, you know, for example, you know, Mr. Olympia is, I mean, it's the Super Bowl of bodybuilding. It's the most prestigious show in the world. So, you know, our premium steak box, you know, we named it that. But each box there in parentheses on the website, it says what it is. 'Cause I don't expect anybody to go in there and, you know, decipher, you know, what I put there, but anyway, there's that, the Arnold is kind of a beef sampler box. There's a Miss Olympia, which is usually a monthly special. Other names all related to bodybuilding, overall title, peak week, pose down, you know, and actually, when we get restocked here by the weekend on another set of steers, we've got some different cuts that are coming in. And I'm going to put together some different versions of boxes than what we've already got, to offer as well. And we'll come up with something for that, for a name, I guess. But it's just the whole six pack meets, like I said, concept was as much, here's my unique story spin, you know, on what we're doing, I guess.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's perfect. And so you do pork as well. It's not just beef.
Right. Yeah. That was my dad had outdoor hogs when I was a kid. I mean, very young. But we've never really had pork, and this first set of pork that we had was the first hogs that I personally ever raised in my life. But people have loved it. I mean, I think that a lot of it goes to that local locker experience. But honestly, some of the best reviews we've had so far on the meat that we've had has been some of the pork products that, you know, that we're selling. So
absolutely. And so people don't have to necessarily order your pre-packaged bundles. They can make a custom order as well, right?
Yeah. We did the pre-packaged bundles. I didn't want to do it to where you click on the site and, well, I want one of this, one of this, one of this, one of this. And then from the shipping standpoint, we've got to be able to know that we can fit, you know, in a box, or if necessary, in some cases, I've shipped them two boxes to get what they want. But we had to control the shipping end of it as far as allowing room for the product, the dry ice and everything else. But yeah, if somebody wants to contact me and say, you know, I'm looking for X amount of this or different combination. Well, yeah, by all means, I can put a price on it and I can do that. I want them to work through us to do that in order to, you know, make sure that, you know, it's feasible and kind of come up with a, you know, fair price that, you know, will work.
Yeah. And so you say here you're constantly evolving cuts, products. I mean, do you have anything uniquely yours, or is it just, you know, when you're doing direct marketing and you don't have a giant meat packing plant like the Big Four, maybe you're a bit limited in things you can offer?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you know, of course the ribeyes and fillets and strips and stuff have been popular. This last round of steers that we did that we're getting back, we had some flank steak done. We've been having the brisket done. You know, those types of things. We also all had about 200 pounds worth of beef sticks that we're having processed that don't have to be refrigerated or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And honestly, we'll use them. You know, I mentioned earlier about being a sponsor at a few of these shows coming up, and anytime you compete, each competitor always gets a kind of a goodie bag with different stuff from the sponsors, and we'll probably put one of those, you know, in there for them, and you know, that kind of thing. So
I'm gonna kind of veer off here a little bit, but have your South African buddies introduced you to something called Biltong?
That's I haven't had it, but yeah, they have. Yeah,
it's dried meat, basically.
Right.
And when it's special, I'm gonna request that you consider start making that, because I think it is catching on. I've seen some U.S. businesses sell it.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't ordered any of it myself yet, but maybe it's something you consider, because all it is dried meat. And a lot of people want to compare it to jerky. I would never compare it to jerky. I think it's 10,000 times better than jerky.
Right.
But that's my request.
Okay. Yeah. No. Trust me. I'm all for feedback and suggestions, because you know it. You know.
Yeah.
Definitely
yeah,
pretend to have it all figured out. You know.
Yeah. Ask you guys what they think. They're experts in it, I promise you. So I think it would definitely be worth considering, for real.
Okay.
Yeah, so obviously agriculture is always demonized in mainstream media, in Washington, and it's all mm-hmm. due to, you know, fear and misinformation and emotions.
Right.
And because we grew up watching Disney movies like Bambi and Lion King. So right. Now we've, you know, given a human emotions to these animals, and now we can't eat them because we feel too sorry for them.
Right.
So now, talking about plant-based meat, what is your perception of that? Where do you see it in the future? Do you think it's going to last? I mean, I think I just reported in the news that their first quarter was not good, which, you know, makes me happy as a rancher's daughter.
Right.
But again, you know, I guess there are some people that maybe need that resource. But yeah, what is your perception? What do you think the future looks like with that?
I think it's a fad. I guess what I don't get is we're taking, you know, a product that's natural that we've eaten for centuries, demonized it, but then somehow a science experiment of ingredients that, you know, that you're going to put in your body that's better for you. I mean, I guess my thing is if eating meat is so bad, then why are you trying to replicate it?
That's yes.
You know, I just don't see how long term it's going to be, you know,
right.
be viable. And quite frankly, I think there's a lot of hypocrisy that comes with it. I mean, you know, we're out here destroying the earth, but, you know, they can't see through the smog from where they live to see what we're doing out here, you know,
right.
And that's just reality. So, you know, I don't know. It's unfortunate that it's gotten to be, you know, such an issue like that. But I said a while back, I mean, if they're zigging, you zag. I mean, you know, I'm doubling down what I'm doing, because I think it's going to hopefully reap a lot of rewards, you know, down the line by doing that.
Yeah, definitely. And it's just, I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with plant-based proteins. It's just that people decide to eat that based off of bad information. That's what I have a problem with.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with people that are vegan or vegetarian. It's America, yeah. This is a free country. You can do whatever you want. Yeah, I just, the biggest frustration is that their decisions are based off of fear and emotion and false science, cherry picked science.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, if that's a route a person wants to go, by all means, I mean, you know, that's your given right to do that. But to regulate us and tell us how we're supposed to do it and how we're supposed to eat, I don't know. I mean, I'm not doing that to them. So let's let's leave us alone. And, you know,
right.
We're all free to make our own, you know, choices and decisions.
Yeah. And I guess that kind of brings me to my next point is us working in agriculture. We need to do better about telling our story. And I don't need to tell you that because I think you already do a very good job. You know, you're putting yourself out there and trying to educate people, and
right.
You've been on how many podcasts and, but yeah, what would you say to the agriculture community? What would you tell them to, what would you tell them to do to reach the consumer population more effectively?
I think, yeah, you know, so social media is, I mean, it's a powerful thing, you know, I mean, it's, you know, I've got to thank Jared McDaniel. I mean, when I was on his podcast, I mean, I've tripled my Twitter following since last fall when I was on it. And
yeah, I'm one of them.
And, you know, I guess that's what I would say is don't be afraid to tell your story, but you know, and not that I'm posting highlights on time, but I'll just give one example that I personally cringe when I see it. You'll never see me do it. Is, you know, a picture of a death loss is a part of raising livestock, but this is just a personal thing with me. But I don't like when I see like a dead calf or, you know, the cow, you know, posted on social media. I get it. It happens. We're not immune to it here, and I'm not saying hide anything, but at the same point, I don't know. I just sometimes think maybe there's a line there that, you know,
sure.
Let's just let it be, you know, type deal. But at the same point, you know, like I said, educate on, you know, what you're doing or this or that. And, you know, people are wanting to see and ask questions.
Yeah. I would think, the middle, you know, because you've got people that are very right and people that are very left. I think the people in the middle, they're genuinely just curious about agriculture, and they,
right.
They want to do the right thing. I think
right.
A lot of people stop eating meat because they just want to do the right thing, and they're just being bombarded by false information, and that's because that's who's running the show. It seems like.
Well, it's false information that's got an agenda behind it that's trying to
yes.
do that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just genuinely good people fall victim to this, and that's
right.
Unfortunate. Yeah. So, yeah, I think people like us and anyone else working in agriculture, you don't have to be some social media influencer with this giant following. You just post what you do every day. It doesn't have to be this grand explanation or this big long paragraph,
well,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of would be my category. I mean, I'm far from having a blue check mark beside my name as far as, you know, online, but that being said, I mean, I've had opportunities to, you know, and that's a nice thing about it. I mean, social media gets a bad rap, but at the same point, I've had opportunities to exchange, you know, DM messages with people on this meat thing or a lot of people reach out to me, you know, ask, you know, questions on, you know, they're trying to make a change in their fitness and this and that. And, I've gotten on the phone with, people from all over the country on this meat thing that are wanting to either doing something or, you know, want to look into it. And just, you know, kind of see what I'm going through and, you know, that part of it's been great, I guess, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I just have one last question for you before we wrap it up here. Do you think this trend to purchase direct from farmers and ranchers is going to is it going to keep growing, or is it going to kind of peter out? Because, you know, when people purchase their food, it usually comes down to convenience and price. What's your take on that?
I guess I'm hopeful that it will continue to be there and to grow. And when the thing is, once you can get that product to them and they try it and they see, you know, my coach, bodybuilding coach, lives in Delaware, and you know, he got, you know, sent him a box and he was blown away. But, you know, imagine in Delaware the type of beef he gets compared to what I get, you know, here.
Yeah, it's not exactly cattle country there.
Exactly. Now, I'm sure his seafood selections are a lot better than what I have here in Illinois, but same thing, you know, I've kind of got a group of customers down there in Florida that we're shipping stuff to, and they're repeat customers already. So I would hope that the trend's there. And I do want to say, you know, I've had a tremendous amount of help kind of being mentored with this. There's, you know, local family, Sumner Point Beef, their website, sumnerpointbeef.com. If you don't want to buy from me, by all means, buy it from them because they're good people. You know, Crystal, Scott, and Matt they've been nothing short of, you know, good to us in how they've, you know, kind of helped, you know, with, you know, get started, I guess. And you know, that kind of thing, you know, from the producer standpoint is, you know, don't be afraid to kind of collaborate. I mean, I talking to one individual on the phone across the country, he said, well, technically it'd be competition, but didn't know if you would talk to me. And I'm like, I'll talk to you. We're not competition because trust me, as much as I want to grow this thing, we all know there's not a chance in the world that I'm going to supply all the beef, you know, yeah. to everybody that needs it, you know? So, I just think there's power in working together on something like that, not be afraid to exchange ideas. And, you know, the old saying is if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room, you know? Yeah. And you know, I think working together like that, I would hope that the future would continue to be well. I mean, if you look at what ButcherBox has done in the last 5-6 years, you know, from a startup to where they're at now, you know. So, I mean, we're going to do the best we can. We're going to, you know, keep pushing at it. And you know, early on, I guess with what we've done, it'd be hard to not be happier with the start we've had. I mean, we've come one early on. We sold out of our state cuts for a brief time and we were dangerously close this time. So, you know, it, you know,
yeah,
the demand is there, you know? So,
yeah. And what I've learned a little bit about sales, it's all about the relationships that you create with people. So if you create a good relationship with your customer, they're going to come back every single time.
And that's one thing. And I promise, I don't care how much this thing scales to whatever level, you know, every time you get a box, we've got a card with our logo on the back, has got the website, you know, my phone number, all our social media information. And then on the other side, you know, as a logo, and every customer gets a handwritten thank you, you know, from us for right. their order. And I can tell you it that will not change. I don't care if I got to dedicate one day per week to sign thank yous, that's the way we're going to do it. And yeah. Maybe that's not a big deal, but I think with a lot of people, I mean, you're not going to get that with, you know, a major, you know, corporation that, you know, that's doing it. So.
Yeah, and I think in this day and age where it seems like maybe morals come in short supply, that kind of thing says a lot and means a lot to people.
I realize somebody from New Jersey or wherever is not going to know me from whatever, you know, but I want to be, you know, try and be a stand-up person, you know, with what I do. And if there's a problem, if there's an issue, we're going to take care of it. And hopefully you kind of develop that trust with people that give you a shot that, you know, if there is a problem or whatever, they're understanding, and we rectify it, we take care of it. And I'm guessing you probably got a customer for life if you handle it the right way.
Absolutely. Well, so Dan, thank you so much for coming on here and talking to me. You're like a celebrity to me. I appreciate everything you're doing, and it's so cool. Like, I don't know how you fit all this stuff into, I don't know how you find the time, but like, I'm sure you would agree with the saying that where there's a will, there's a way. Like, you're going to find a way to get it done. Right. And anything other than that is just an excuse. So again, thank you for coming on here today. The Agriculture Podcast, I'm Jessica Benson here on the American Ag Network.